Sweet.
Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona, you're listening to Breakthrough Thinking. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Dave Isaac, the host. And we have, of course, Dr. Sharon Von Lentz and Justin Hagee, a returning veteran coming back on the show. Dr. Sharon, Negotiating the Crossroads show. I think there's another part to that title, too.
Relationship renewal.
I knew there was a second part.
Renewal.
I like that. Really? Yeah.
And we changed the topic from the divorce show because a lot of my clients are Christian clients, and they didn't want to listen to the divorce show.
That doesn't sound very positive.
And we've invited Pastor Justin Hagee today because he also does a lot of relationship counseling, a lot of couples and marital counseling, and he's the pastor of the Shelter Church here in Phoenix that I've attended on a regular basis, and he has a lot to say, and
I
respect
yes, you do.
He has
wow.
to say, so I invited him again.
Well, the topic today is athletic and marriage, athletes and marriage.
Really? I could talk all about that.
That would be interesting, wouldn't it?
You spend the whole time on Lamar Odom and Khloe Kardashian or whatever that is.
Oh, yeah, that was a weird thing.
Are they
getting divorced now?
Oh, I have no idea. I just
probably.
Know that,
didn't he, like, cheat with 17 women?
Something like that. And
I think six at a time.
There you go.
Or was it seven?
Yeah.
I don't know. Greg filmed it. That's all I know. But anyway, so relationship renewal, negotiating the crossroads. Yeah, I agree with you, Dr. Sharon, that it's much a better title than just the divorce show.
Yes.
Because we don't want to see people get divorced.
No, it's really a tragic thing. I mean, I see too much of it in my office and the aftermath of it. And we're here to try to prevent that. And it's, it's an important thing to do to strengthen relationships and couples and communication and the things that are necessary for them to get themselves back on track.
Totally.
And Justin, would you introduce yourself and give a little bio?
Sure, a bio.
For our listeners.
Yeah, I guess. My name is Justin Hagee. I'm the senior pastor, the lead pastor over at the Shelter Church here in Phoenix, Arizona, on Cave Creek Road in Greenway. And we opened that church about 3 years ago now, my wife and I. And I've been in ministry for about 17 years, which is half
almost half
my life. You
look too young for that.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, you really do.
Half my life. Half my life, I started out as an intern at a church and then traveled for a living for a couple of years and then moved
wow.
to the East Coast and did some youth ministry out there and then came back and associated pastored out here and off of Cactus Road and then launched the Shelter 3 years ago. So I'm a seasoned veteran in the ministry, if you want to call it. Too.
And radio, too.
I guess.
Third time's the charm.
I love being on this. It's great. I mean, it's an awesome experience. And I'm excited right now because my wife is only 4 weeks away from our second child.
Yay.
Wow,
that's
nice.
A happy day.
Remember that first radio show?
Yeah.
I said you had two children, and you said, no, I don't have two children.
Yeah.
I think I was prophetic then.
I know this, that at that time there was talks. There was talks of it, but
you didn't know about it yet.
Oh, you were negotiating.
We were
negotiating the crossroads.
Yes, we were at a crossroads, my wife and I, at that point. So,
who won the negotiation?
She had her ways, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, the visualization is killing me here.
Okay.
So, okay, back to Dr. Shin. So what are we going to do? We're going to do five love languages.
And we're going to talk in general about what makes a good relationship. And,
good idea.
Get some, more input from Pastor Justin and some of the things that he does in marriage counseling.
Yeah.
Wow. That's interesting to me. I think this could be a good standard-setting type of show. Where what makes a good relationship, and probably in the context of marriage, right?
Right. Or,
yeah.
Or leading up to it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So why don't we have a little discussion first, just to set the framework, what makes a good relationship?
Wow.
I think that's a great topic, because
mm-hmm.
a lot of people don't know. They just connect, and and that they don't think about things and they just think it's all chemistry, and I don't believe that at all. But
sure.
Because it doesn't seem to work. But what does make a good relationship, and who wants to start first? We got two professionals here.
Oh, boy.
Well, I'm sort of a professional. That'd be three.
Yeah,
well, there
three.
You go.
All right. Well,
I wouldn't say I'm a professional, but I would say that what you said, what makes a good relationship would be, and we've talked about this before when I've been on the air, is getting the expectations out and correct and clear. And so when those are out and clear, everyone knows where they're going. And so I've said so many times that the point is not to be the same in a relationship, but it's very important to be one. And so I think one of the foundations to a proper relationship, whether it be a romantic relationship or a business relationship or even a friendship in a lot of ways, is if people kind of know and the roles are defined. And a lot of times that seems like an awkward conversation for even friends. But I know for me personally, I like to allow people to understand, hey, this is kind of how I do business. These are my goals. These are my values. These are the things that are important to me. And setting those up, I think, really establishes that. Because for me, anytime that I've ever been into a crisis situation, most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time, it's because there wasn't proper expectations set. And usually what happens is one person's wanting something that another doesn't even know. And so the person that doesn't know anything, they have no idea what they're doing wrong. Yet the other person is sitting there, he's stewing. He's thinking, hey, she intentionally did this. He intentionally tried to hurt my feelings. And if someone would just speak up at the beginning and go, look, this is what I want, this is what I'm looking for, then those feelings tend to go away.
That totally makes sense. Expectations, because if you don't know what they are, you never know how to meet them anyway.
Right.
And then what do you... I mean, I was going to say negotiate, but I guess that is the word,
yeah.
Is that if you have different expectations, Dr. Sharon, what do you tell your patients? Try to meet in the middle or come up with a solution that both parties can feel good about?
We have to negotiate that usually, you know, in a session if people are at odds about what they want. But expectations, I mean, you hit the nail right on the head, because I can think... you know, most of my life in the relationships that I've been in, that if you have the expectations out of proportion, and then you're going to fail.
Sure.
In a relationship.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you want something. And there's this book comes to mind that I read in graduate school that I used. Actually, it's part of a honors thesis, and it's called The Invisible Partners, and it's about... It's a book by one of Carl Jung's followers. I think his name is John Sanford, called The Invisible Partners, and it's about the unconscious part of ourselves that causes those expectations to be unrealistic,
yeah. Yeah.
Where we are looking outside of ourselves for someone to complete us,
right.
From those parts of our childhood wounds that haven't been healed.
Sure.
And that when you said expectations, that really brought that to mind.
Dave, I think what you asked is you know, what happens when two people aren't cohesive in there? I am of the opinion that there are unchangeables in everybody, right?
Unchangeables?
There's things that are just not going to be changed. And no matter how hard, I'll just give an example, you know, with my wife. I grew up in a home where... order of everything was so important. You know, just everything has its place. It needs to be in its place. No one's allowed to go to bed or even wake up without the things in its place. And my wife grew up in a home with a lot of people, and it was much smaller, and that really wasn't a priority. For me, it's an unchangeable. I don't operate good if things aren't in order. And my wife, who kind of operated in a very... I guess, orderly, chaotic upbringing, it was tough
Organized chaos.
Organized chaos. It was tough for her when I was bringing the law, if you will, in the first 6 months of our marriage when I was getting frustrated. And I just had to tell her, hey, this is not only just an expectation. This is something that can't be changed to me because it's like nails on a chalkboard for me when things aren't in order in the home, you know, if things aren't put away. And even though that may not have been important for her, she really recognized really quickly it was something that she was going to have to compromise on and improve at because for me it was literally something that would just throw me off, and it was something that I could not be that could not be changed. So I think there's things when each person has those different things in their life that says, look, this won't change. This is either how I was raised or I had the past, a traumatic experience where I don't like loud music. Or I mean, that's mm-hmm. probably a terrible example, but there's things that have happened to people in their upbringing that make that are unchangeables. No matter how much work is done, it's just going to be how it is. And the partner, the other person's responsibility, I believe it is to kind of notice those, to take a look and say, hey, that's where I know I'm going to have to adapt because this right here is something that person is not changing.
So you believe, though, in both partners there would be unchangeable things.
Absolutely.
Some, and some to major degrees, some to minor degrees, perhaps?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And
but those things should be discussed before one gets married if
exactly.
there's unchangeable.
And it's definitely something that I, you know, I strive to just pound in premarital counseling because so many times, you know, people say, oh, I love you too. And hey, you came from this type of family. I came from this type of family. You're a Christian. I'm a Christian. You like rock and roll music. I like country music. Those mesh or whatever. And then they just get together because everything, and they don't talk about serious things like, hey, this right here is something that I believe in and it's unchangeable. I don't want to move on it. And this other person thinks a completely opposite way, and then they find themselves at wit's end, you know, 2 months into the marriage.
I would think some of the more difficult unchangeables would be something that have deep meaning to people. So I would think religion might be one of them, where that could be an unchangeable situation potentially. Possibly politics, possibly. You know, it depends how extreme.
I think how people handle their finances.
I think that's a big one. That could be huge, in fact. And both of you probably seen that where, let's say, once one partner is they just like spending for whatever reason. The other one likes savings.
Yeah.
How do you handle such a thing? Let's start, Dr. Sharon, let's start with you. How do you've seen that, I'm sure, before, because finances, at least I understand, could be one of the bigger reasons people can split up.
Yeah, that's true.
So how do you handle someone comes in and go, you know, the husband said, oh, she keeps spending all the money, and the wife said, oh, this guy never goes out and saves every nickel. What do you do? Is that an unchangeable?
Well, I think that's something that has to be discussed, and they, you know, one party may have, you know, they have to give themselves a budget and, you know, put it in some kind of program or do it on paper and make agreements about what can be spent and what not can be spent. I mean, I've definitely spent many sessions with people on their spending habits.
So let me ask you this, Justin. If it's tied to some emotional need, spending, how do you handle that? I mean, it's more than just spending money.
Absolutely. I mean, that goes to a completely different level, even outside of a relationship. You know, it has something to do with the personal person. And the one thing I would say in regards to that is that any of these issues that are talked about in that way, you know, have to come from the stance of teamwork, have to come to the stance of, hey, listen, we're not in a disagreement, which means the end. We're in a disagreement, and we're going to continue to work until we find commonality and oneness in that. And when it comes to finances, the one thing I see is a lot of times there's a lot of pride associated to that. Well, I'm the one that makes the most money, so I'm the one that determines how to spend it. Well, that's not what you said when you said I do. You know, that's not what you committed to. I'm the one that decorates the house, and I plan all the meals, and I do this, so I should be the one that, you know, authorizes such and such things. And there's a lot of pride that comes with money. And so I kind of usually tend to talk through that, like, is this something that you staked your claim to where, hey, this is where you get your sense of self-worth from what you can accumulate? I know a lot of couples where one of the two are savers, and that person tends to be extremely rigid because for them, their value comes from what they can attain. And so what ends up happening to the other person is they're wanting experiences. They're wanting not necessarily to spend just to spend, but they're just wanting to be, free, if you will. And so, again, talking through those things at the beginning, how valuable is that? How valuable is that?
That's got to be hugely valuable. Let's take a quick break right now. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion. And here's the question I'm going to ask, and hopefully you'll contemplate it during this break. What if you had two partners, two unchangeable things on both ends of the spectrum, so one can't compromise at all, two unchangeable items on the same topic, and we'll see what the answers are from Dr. Sharon and Justin Hagee, pastor of the Shelter here in Phoenix, Arizona. This is Relationship Renewal, negotiating the crossroads. That's what we'll be negotiating when we come back after this break.
Birenbaum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
And welcome back again. You are listening to Breakthrough Thinking live from the Regis Suites. This is Relationship Renewal, Negotiating the Crossroads, starring Dr. Sharon Von Lentz, special guest Justin Hagee, the Shelter, pastor at the Shelter in Phoenix, Arizona. We've been talking about what makes a good relationship. Very interesting thus far. And, of course, if you want to hear a replay, go to breakradioshow.com under Archives. And look under Relationship Renewal, and you can hear all Dr. Sharon's great shows. The question I left both of you with, if there were two people, and we'll do two different scenarios, one that are not married yet, the two partners, one that are married, they're two unchangeable things. They both have unchangeables on the same topic. So the example, let's take your example, Justin. You came with more order when you grew up. The other partner did not have much order, so they were both, in this example, both unchangeable. Sure. One can work only through chaos. The other one could only work through order. No one's willing to compromise because, it, like you said, it would drive you nuts. It's just part of who you are.
Sure.
Let's start with, first of all, not married, what do you do?
Yeah, in a not married situation, I'd say get in, take your time then. Really, I mean that. I know that probably is not what the listeners want to hear, but When you come to an impasse and you're not yet committed by law, I say wait.
What do you wait for though?
I think you wait. And, well, for me This is what I would tell the congregation.
Yeah.
I wait for peace.
Okay.
Because peace has always been
good
for me.
Yeah.
When I know I'm doing the right thing is when I'm in peace. And when I'm not, and by the way, fear is completely different than you can still be fearful and have peace. I that's just at least my observation. But
okay.
When someone's rested, when you're rested with it, when you're settled and confident, I always believe, you know, that's the Lord's go ahead. And so I tell, but I wait, trust me, I wait for peace on a lot of decisions. And sometimes I get, I get accused of dragging my feet on things. I just want to wait until I know it's right. And that comes when I'm rested at it. That doesn't mean I'm not scared or even sometimes worried. But I need to be at peace in the decision.
So Dr. Sharon, same question. They're not married. Two unchangeables by both partners.
Well, it would depend on what the unchangeables are. I mean, if one is messy and the other one isn't, I mean, it kind of reminds me when I was married a long time ago, I kept an orderly house, and my ex-husband was a very talented musician. He had 13 instruments and about 25, 30 boxes of a comic book collection.
Whoa.
So I didn't want those things all over the house.
Eesh.
So I had put them all in one room. I actually had Superman wallpaper, and that was like his extra room that he got to play in, you know.
That's not a bad idea.
And so he could have chaos in there, and I had the rest of the house clean.
Now, would chaos ever come and creep into the other rooms, though?
No, it really didn't.
And the thing that I would add to that is remembering that let's use something out of someone being orderly and someone not. Let's say that someone, any other example that you want to give, I don't think that it's, if you come from the stance that my way isn't the only way, and you respect where that other person is, they're unchangeable. You respect that, you're going to make it a lot better than if you're saying, well, this is my room and this is her room and my room's better than her room, you know, or whatever like that. There's got to be this mutual respect of going, hey, well, my way is not the only way. My unchangeable, the thing that I'm latched onto, probably comes from some wiring that I had that was maybe a little bit out of balance or extreme in the first place, right? Because usually if you look at unchangeables, they come from people that are extreme in one or a couple areas.
Mm-hmm.
And so the thing that happens is sometimes when we're extreme in that, we become so passionate about it, we blow up somebody that feels different. And so the respect of that from let's say there's a husband and wife in the midst of that right now. I can't get past his addiction to sports. I can't get past it. Well, maybe that was his connection to his father growing up. Or, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm just throwing. So where she's stewing about that, she's stewing that he's putting time, money, and energy into that. And he's stewing at her because she's frustrated about it. If they both would just say, hey, listen, this person doesn't get this. They don't understand why it's important to me. I'm going to respect that.
But would it really be about sports? Could it be, Dr. Sharon, more about the wife in this case, let's say, the lack of attention she's getting, but she thinks it's because of addiction to sports? Would the guy then just have to say, well, yeah, let's carve out some time and make
sure. Quality time.
Yeah.
Because that might be her love language.
Sure.
It might be her love language.
Yeah.
So.
There's a lot of complexities to this,
mm-hmm.
evidently.
There is.
So now let's take the scenario. Unchangeable, both partners in the order and chaos, but they're married. So your answer might be a little different.
Yeah, it would, but it also would be same in the fact that it's got to start with the idea of respect. And, can we agree to disagree? Yeah, everyone throws that sentence out, and it's kind of like, oh, yeah, agree to disagree. But really think about what you're saying. Can we agree? Can we make a pact? Can we shake hands? Can we have peace on something that's a disagreement, right? When couples can't do that, when they can't lay down their bone to pick, and every day it becomes something that they have to, then you're just going to have strife. I know a couple right now that's been married for many, many years, and neither one of them, you know, they had some stuff that happened in the first 3 years of their marriage. Neither one of them want to let go of that. Neither one. And so right now, they wake up in the morning, the first thing that he told me that he does is he wants to put her on edge. I said to him the other day, I said, well, why are you married? Well, the children. I really want to stay together for the children. And I said, don't ever say that. Because what you're doing is you're giving an example for those kids of how a husband treats a wife. You're doing them a great disservice. Well, I want to be around them. I want to see their time. No, no, that's not an excuse. When you can't, when you're so frustrated, we're so bent up from past to where you're purposely trying to throw rocks at the other person, if you will. Just, hey, there's an end date for this. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Wow. That's sad. I mean, if they
it's tough
holding on to something so long ago.
It is.
And putting someone on edge. I mean, really, if you look through the filter. And I think I may have said this on one of the last shows you were on, is that if the purpose of marriage, or if it could be one of the purposes of marriage, to help your partner back to God, that would be complete opposite of trying to help your partner up be on edge.
Right.
So if you look through those filters, how would that solve things? It would be amazing, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You'd sort of put them first with proper boundaries, but if that's your goal in life, I mean, as a marriage, as one of your main values, how would a marriage be if you had that as a criteria?
I look at what the foundation of marriage was, if you come from a godly standpoint in Genesis, where the Lord said, hey, this is the reason why a man leaves his mother and father and clings to his wife, that she and he might be a helpmate for one another.
Now,
if you take that concept as a helpmate, right? Is a helpmate somebody that wants to put someone on edge?
No.
A helpmate somebody that wants to assist. That means a couple of things, in my opinion, right? Assist means a person that doesn't take the spotlight when good does happen, right? It allows that person, hey, I'm assisting you in what your vision and what your goals are.
A cheerleader to their goals and helping them.
Exactly.
I like it.
And then the second is just making sure that their passion becomes, if you will, their passion becomes your passion. Not saying this, that my wife has to love golf like I do or love the idea that I'm going on the radio show. She's not listening today. She's listened to all the other things. It's a passion of mine to be on the radio. I like doing it. But she, right before I walked in, she sent me a text, hey, you're going to do great today. It's something that you love to do. I love you. Well, that's an assist. That's just putting me, that's the opposite of, and that's
awesome.
That's a helpmate.
Supporting you.
Exactly.
That's awesome.
So you're, you know, and so what it means, if you look at it deeper, Dr. Sharon, to me it would mean that it goes back to the individual first in that you can't be selfish to be a helpmate. You got to strive for selflessness. Is that right?
Yes, I think that's a good point.
Yeah.
You have to love the other person enough, you know, to get yourself out of the way.
Yeah, I like that, how you just mm-hmm. said that.
And if we really, though, I mean, and I know we have listeners out there listening, and if I can just say one thing, you know, take a moment and really consider what it means to be selfless.
I think that's good, yeah.
Right? Because I don't think anybody really has really selfless. So meaning that you're putting people at all times, right, before you. Well, I don't do that. I don't do that on the road. I don't do that at the line at the mall, right? I don't do that. There's a lot of times when what happens is when I get tired, when I get frustrated, you know, I may set out the goal to be selfless, but every once in a while, and probably more so than not, you know, I say, no, this is about me, and this is about me right now, and everybody else has to do it my way. So when we say selfless, you know, it's very... I'm always, when people just throw that around, I kind of go, hey, whoa, really think what selflessness is. Because we find ourselves, especially Americans, you know, as consuming as much as possible and doing things the easy way as much as possible, right? The path of least resistance. And the path of least resistance a lot of times does not coincide with selflessness. A lot of times to be selfless, you have to do what's hard.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you know, my wife is, you know, again, just giving a personal example, she's 8.5 months pregnant, 8 months pregnant. There's things that I have to do I didn't normally do that I don't necessarily want to do, but to be selfless, to be a support for her, to be her helpmate, I got to get up in the morning and make her breakfast.
Yeah.
I'm already got my stuff that I want to do. Well, I'm laying that aside so that I can assist her.
So are you saying then it's a good goal to be selfless? I think what you're saying is, although it's very challenging, and so no one should beat themselves over the fact that they don't consistently maybe do it as much as I'd like to.
Well, and I think everyone, if possible, and Dr. Sharon, I'm sure you can agree with this, you know, every how that looks different from every person. But if it's not a conscious thing on our mind, I'm not going to be selfless.
Yeah.
If I don't wake up in the morning and maybe multiple times during the day, check myself, right? Check myself and say, am I going to be selfless in this situation? My natural tendency is to do what's good for me and do what's the
easiest. That's the human condition, isn't it?
Right. So
yeah.
The opposite of the human condition is selflessness.
Yeah. Which makes sense, though, to at least be aware of it, try to focus in on it. I think most or a lot of parents with their kids try to exert, you know, try to demonstrate selflessness, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. You can't be a parent and, you know, and not be selfless.
Yeah.
I mean, you can be, but it doesn't work very well.
I agree 100% with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask Pastor Justin a question when you talked about, you know, leaving the mother and the father and cleaving
to that person.
To the person or the partner. What do you see in counseling or in relationships when the person hasn't cleaved or hasn't left the parent, the mother or the father, and they're still, you know, bound to them emotionally? Mm. And how much that affects relationships, because
hugely.
I think it's a huge problem.
Hugely, yeah. It's funny that you said huge problem. I don't know if I'd say huge, the word problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I only, a lot of that stuff I do from like a personal experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my mom and my father got divorced when I was 2.5. My mom moved from Fort Lauderdale, Florida to Park City, Utah, as far as away as you could get from my dad. And so for a while, the first 4 or 5 years of my life, it was me and my mom, kind of against the world. So there was a bond there that, yeah, when I got married, there was definitely a distancing from that. But my mom's my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I just asked my wife this. Please never make me make a choice between you two. Not saying that I would choose my mom.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I know I wouldn't. I would choose who I committed to, my wife.
Mm-hmm.
But for both of them, don't ever make me have to make that choice. Let's just stay away from things like that. Because for me, honoring my mother, you know, I've cleaved to my wife. She's my wife.
Mm-hmm.
But I honor my mom still.
Mm-hmm.
And she's still a part of my life. She still has a voice in my life. And she has a voice in my wife's life. I know that sounds strange, but it's just, again, one of those things that we talked up in advance. Before we ever got married, I said, and the reason why is because I waited for my mom and dad's approval before I married my wife, I know that's super old-fashioned, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's going way back. But because of that, I think I set the tone for the marriage right away, going, look, my parents still have a voice. They don't have any authority over me.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, zero authority over me. But they still have a voice.
Mm-hmm.
They still matter. So I've been able to leave totally their covering,
mm-hmm.
but I still have a great deal of honor for them. And so when I see couples that have not yet done that, and the son or the daughter is still attached in an unhealthy way, it just takes time. But usually there's some good truths that come out that show, hey, look, this is unhealthy and this is hurting the relationship.
So it sounds like what you're saying, and I like how you said it, is that, you know, telling your wife don't ever put you in a position to choose.
Yeah.
What you're saying is that people have choices. You can be inclusive. So if there's something going on that involves your mom, you can look one way and say, hey, how do we include everyone?
Sure.
Rather than separation. So
sure.
If there's some, whether it's a wife or a husband, they want to just conquer and divide. They want an act of separation.
Sure.
For probably many reasons, and
sure.
it could be a variety. And Dr. Sharon, you probably have seen that, and it causes problems. But to me, anytime you try to separate someone from a family, that could be a problem. And rather than ask, you know, how can we include everyone?
Sure.
I mean, isn't that the better way to go? I mean, it's got to be, right?
Well, I guess what I was talking about is when, you know, you have the mother-in-law or the father-in-law that is, you know, intruding themselves into the relationship, you know, in an unhealthy way or affecting the, you know, the children. And,
and
you know, where I've had couples where, you know, the husband was constantly, you know, over at his mother's house, fixing everything, but never doing anything around their house. you know, and that kind of thing.
Sure. Interfering.
You know, interference in an unhealthy way so that, you know, where the wife's not getting any quality time and people have to juggle their responsibilities and divide them. But I think that there are a number of cases where I see that affects,
absolutely,
you know, the relationship and the quality of the relationship and the quality of the intimacy,
yeah,
or lack of, because the person hasn't emotionally bonded to the partner because they're still bound to the other parent.
And would that be like an overbearing mother-in-law, father-in-law? It's more about the
It could be an overbearing parent, but it also could be, you know, too strong of an attachment, that emotional nurturing, you know, that hasn't been resolved. In other words, that the person still needs that parent to approve of them
to such an
extent that their focus of attention is there instead of in the relationship.
That's good.
That is good. That's a very good point. So how do you overcome something like that?
Well, probably need to be in therapy.
Everyone, even the
well, not
parent.
Everybody. Oh. I mean that person that need. I mean, you know, the parent may, you know, not want to come in, but, you know, that person that's having, you know, the issue would be the best place to resolve it anyway.
So could it be a sign let's say it's not an overbearing parent,
mm-hmm,
but it's a parent that's feels that they have separation anxiety and not the
I can go
the
both ways.
Let's
yeah.
say a daughter.
They can be intrusive and calling every day. And
yeah. Or
yeah.
What if...
Three times a day. I've had people who've had a parent going three times a day.
So yeah. Justin, is there a fine line between if you are committed to someone and let's say it's a couple that wants to get married, but one of the parents makes, let's say, the daughter feel guilty that, hey, you can't leave me. What
sure.
happens then?
Well,
you can't be fully committed to
sure.
the potential spouse, right?
That's good.
And it's tough. That's
how do you handle that?
Oh, well, you know, I think
you run for the hills, right?
Yeah, and there's a lot of details that go into that. But one thing I would ask that daughter, if that was the case, is, what do you want to do? For instance, do you really want to call mom three times a day?
Yeah.
Because, see, the one thing, at least in, you know, boy, this could be totally controversial, not good.
We like controversy, right?
But
Dave likes controversy.
Yeah.
But for me, I'll say this, is that I have made it a choice that with my wife and with my mom and with anybody that I'm in communication with is to be totally operate in integrity. So, for instance, if I don't want to call, when I call my mother now, which is once every 8 days, 9 days, something
okay.
like that, she knows I want to talk to her. I'm not doing a good deed. I'm not whatever, what would be that word, patronizing her.
Yeah.
I really want to talk to her. And so I would ask that daughter, hey, what's the real deal here?
Yeah.
Because if you're playing games, anybody can put their foot down if they would just say, hey, look, you know, this is where I am in my life, and it may cause some scuffle there, some hurt feelings, but at least there isn't this anger building up inside of a person. Oh, I have to call my mom today. I have to do this. Man, you start doing that, you might as well not do it because it's not honest. It's not genuine.
Yeah.
There's nothing real in it, and you're just becoming embittered towards the process. Whereas if you pick up the phone when you want to,
yeah.
when you go over to the house. See, now, obviously, it's not a blanket statement for everything. You got to spend the holidays somewhere. Sometimes you got to go to a family that maybe you got some scuffles with. But what I always say is do whatever you do, do it in full integrity, because if you do, at least then you're not swallowing your tongue or and holding something back. Just do it. If you do it in integrity and in love, then you respond appropriately. Think about that. If that's your setup and that's your motive, I'm going to do everything in integrity and in love, 9 times out of 10, you're going to respond appropriately to that person. You may be in pain at the moment, but if you're doing it in a loving way, they're going to understand. You understand what I mean?
Yeah, I do. That's good advice.
Mm-hmm.
And it, boy, relationships are very complex.
They're complicated.
I'd say.
Yeah, there's no question. Now, there was something that was interesting that you said on the break, a sermon I think you just gave. Was it just last Sunday?
It was this last Sunday, yeah.
And this might be interesting since it seems to be fairly common, right?
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
And really a big U, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If I spelled that right.
Yeah.
I did.
Mm-hmm.
Your sermon on adultery.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about that, because I think that also, unfortunately, first of all, they shouldn't be doing it. Second of all, it ends up in divorce, usually, I
sure.
suspect.
Yeah. Well, you know, I took...
Not
I,
always.
I took the angle from, you know, because I wanted to include everyone in the message. You know, adultery, when most people think of adultery, they think of it as strictly cheating on your spouse. And the way Christ taught it in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 27 and 28 was that he said that if any man, anyone, looks at a woman with lust in his heart, he's already committed adultery.
Mm-hmm.
So what he said is if your good eye causes you to lust, it's better to gouge it out than for it to cause you to sin. And that was an extreme saying and kind of figurative saying of his that I believe that what he was trying to say is that the heart dictates everything, and it goes back to what I just said about integrity. You know, adultery is so complicated, but so many people can cheat on their spouse in a way outside of the physical. Pornography is rampant in our country.
Yeah,
yes,
but,
it is.
But just beyond pornography, I've known many of people who have cheated on their spouse without really cheating on them. I'm not even talking in pornography either. I'm talking about they've given their heart away to somebody else that gave them attention.
Or the internet,
absolutely.
These chat rooms or whatever. I think there's a bunch of married people probably hanging around there.
I looked up the definition of the word lust, which is what the word that Christ used. He said, if anyone looks upon a woman in lust, he's committed adultery in his heart. And I looked up the word lust, and the first definition of the word lust was illicit sexual desire. The second definition was this. Desiring something that is forbidden.
Oh, interesting.
So what I brought out the point in that was this, is that many times adultery is wanting, a strong desire for wanting something that is wrong.
Yeah.
If you think about even back in the beginning, back in Genesis, Eve looked upon the fruit with, and she saw that it was pleasant to the eyes. Right? I know people that lust for power. I know people that lust for money. I know that people that have an uncontrolled appetite for food, right? So what I mentioned is I said this kind of encompasses so much, wanting something that we're not supposed to have.
Mm, gotcha.
And so I said, I kind of just said a little joke. I said, ladies, you're not off the hook here. Because most of the ladies are sitting in the church going, wait a minute, hey, this Jesus said if a man looks upon a woman with lust in his heart, well, they're thinking they're good. And none of them are looking at Brad Pitt, you know, lust in their heart. And I go, wait a minute, hold on a second. Some of you would rather have someone that's more vocal or something. There's many things that people can complain about the partner that they've committed to, that they've decided to share their life in. And so adultery happens a lot of times when we make the choice to wish for something and act upon that wish that we're not supposed to have, that's outside the marriage bed.
Wow, that makes total
Very
sense.
Good.
I like that. That's how did they get that sermon? Is it something they can go on your website and
yeah.
hear it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's www.theshelteraz.com, theshelteraz.com, and then you go to media there. And we actually did 11 weeks on the Ten Commandments, and that was one of them. So,
oh, wow.
You did?
It was really, really cool, very, very powerful, and kind of tried to get not just the letter of the law and all those, but the spirit behind the law.
Mm-hmm.
We took some time in the back end of that sermon, in the back end of that series, and talked about the heart there and how to come back from that.
Mm-hmm.
How to come back from adultery. And that was a really powerful thing that happened in our church on this past Sunday, because there were so many people that have been impacted by this. And one of the things that I mentioned to them, and I think a lot of them at the moment when I first said it, they thought it was a pipe dream. I said this, I said, the act of adultery that happened to you, whether you were a perpetrator of it or a victim of it, can't define your future. It can't be the foundation that every single thing in your life is. I told them about a story that about 4 or 5 years ago, I was in my yard, I was snapping a mesquite tree. I was just doing some pruning. And as I was bringing the branches outside, you know, into the back area, my arm got scraped. And I had this, like, really cool-looking, like, cut on my arm. And I just wanted to do a little test the next day or the next week. I decided when that thing scarred up and scabbed over to take the scab off and let it bleed again, which
oh.
is really gross, right?
I'm painting right now with our doctor.
And then yeah. it would scab up again. Then I would do it, and it'd scab up. And I just tested how many people asked me about my scar during that week. And would you know, no matter what breakfast, lunch, or social setting I did, just by wearing that, you know, just a shirt that showed it, you know, was on my forearm, everyone asked about it. And I told the church, I said, how amazing is it that a lot of you that have been victims of adultery within the first 3 or 4 minutes of me meeting you, you know, I know that. And the thing is what I'm saying is scars are scars. Things happen that do happen. And I'm not saying that we can't, that they're not supposed to hurt. But the point is the tragic thing that happened to us, it can't be the only thing that we talk about. It can't define yeah. who we are forever. It can be something, obviously, if it's fresh, it can be something that's painful. It can be something that you have to work through, but it can't be something that 6 years down the road, that's the first thing someone knows about you. Does that make sense?
It right. does. And I do believe next time that happens to you when you're pruning, you get a cut or a scratch. That I have friends in Hollywood that can actually do a fake scar,
okay.
so it won't hurt as
yeah,
much.
Yeah, it was painful. My wife thought I was a total nut job for doing that.
Not really. I know people. Okay, so anyway, that I like it. That's a very interesting take on adultery because, sadly, I how many times have you seen couples, and whether it's the guy or the, you know, the girl, you know, and they go, wow, look at that hot, you know, guy or hot girl. And that's got to be, first of all, it can't make the other partner feel very good.
Sure.
You know? And that would be in your definition of adultery, though.
Well, but I'll say this, Dave, is that I believe that God created all of us and he created us with sexual desire. Right? I mean, I don't, he created.
You just got great
attention.
Just,
there you go.
Control
yeah.
it.
He created us with that. But,
yeah, you're right.
But the thing is I lust, again, the definition of lust is wanting something that's forbidden or illicit sexual desire, uncontrolled.
So how do you do that? I mean, the sad thing is in America, and this could be another complete show, a whole different, similar topic, but the media seems to just indoctrinate people.
Sure.
On a conscious and unconscious level where they're redirecting the sexual desire and creating a lustful type of mindset. And that's probably a whole different that could be a 2-hour, 3-hour, 8-hour show in itself, but how the media impacts people. As a pastor and a psychologist, Dr. Sharon, I mean, how do you get people back on track and counteract these crazy ads?
Yeah.
And it's subliminal ads. It's nuts, right?
Yeah, we were watching the game on Sunday afternoon, and there was a Bud Light commercial.
Which one? Seattle, San Francisco?
No, I have the ticket this year.
Oh, RFK.
The game, and so my son was sitting there watching, and there was a Bud Light commercial with some girls that had some bikinis on, and he said to my wife, my little 4-year-old, he said, "Daddy's going to marry those girls."
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Is that somehow they are trying to relate certain things, images, to a certain product.
But what are they really doing? They're creating desire.
Yeah.
So what they're creating desire for their product, but they're also there. In my opinion, and Romans chapter 13 talks about this in detail, but it says this: make no provisions for the flesh. Make no provisions for the man, your old man, for the sinful nature, right? Because we all have that. We all have a flesh man. We all have a spirit man. We all have a soulish nature, our mind, will, and emotions.
Yeah.
And what that verse of scripture talks about in Romans chapter 13, verse 14, says, make no provisions for the flesh. Make no provisions. So meaning this, hey, whatever I have to do to combat that, I'm going to do to combat that.
Mm.
That means for me, I may actually have to put the computer out in the middle of the living room Maybe I do.
Oh.
I mean, that would be a stance of great faith. That would be a stance of great discipline. Because the thing is what I said to everybody on Sunday is, I don't think Tiger Woods woke up one morning and said, you know what, I'm just going to cheat on my wife.
No, it happens gradually. Absolutely. It happens with a cup of coffee.
It happens
and
with
then another lunch.
Small choices.
And then, yeah.
Small choices and make no provision for that.
Right.
Look, if you know that that's where you are, hey, watch yourself, you know, because no one's above the ability to fall. And if you really consider yourself that way, I mean, really, truly consider
yourself
that way.
Then you're set up for a fall.
Right.
Mm. Wow, you guys have great wisdom.
I don't know about that.
No, I like it a lot. That's very, very, wow. Can you believe we're only 2 minutes away from the end of the show? This just flew by.
It was a good show.
So let's go to Justin first. It is a great show. Justin, how do they get in touch with you? Contact information.
Sure, yeah. You can go to the website at www.theshelteraz.com or email us at info@theshelteraz.com. Love to see you in church at 10 o'clock on Sunday mornings or 7 o'clock for Bible study and kind of a meeting on Thursday nights.
Nice. And Dr. Sharon, how do they get in touch with you?
602-334-3776 or my email address is drsharon, S-H-A-R-O-N, V-O-N-L-E-N-T-Z, 123@gmail.com.
Dang, that is a long email
address. That is. That sounds like a volume one entry.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll just have to Google you.
But you can always hear Dr. Sharon live here every third Tuesday from 2 to 3 on BTBN, Breakthrough Thinking Broadcasting Network. And Dr. Sharon, thank you so much. Justin, thank you.
Yeah,
it's always nice seeing you.
Yeah,
go Redskins. I know they started off a little.
I'll be there this weekend against the Detroit Lions. So.
Wow. Oh, Cardinals just beat Detroit.
Yeah, it was a good one.
And everyone have a great night. We'll see everyone tomorrow for Breakthrough Sports. Real Hockey Talk coming up tomorrow. And everyone have a great night. See you later.